Hello, this is Vanessa Lowe. You are listening to Germantown Community Radio, WRLGLP, at 92.9 FM in Northwest Philadelphia. Welcome to Vanessa's Money Hour, where I talk about tools and resources to help build financially healthy lives. I'm your host, Vanessa Lowe. This show airs every first and third Saturday of the month. I welcome your questions, your suggestions, and your feedback. You can email those to gtownmoneyhour@gmail.com. For this first Saturday, a beautiful first Saturday in April, I am so excited to welcome my guest, Senator Art Haywood.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm so glad you're here.
Glad to be here.
On G-Town Radio. So what happened is I am on the mailing list, of course, for Senator Haywood. And I saw in the last newsletter that he is working on a bill to support a state retirement plan. And I was like, I got to get this. I got to get him talking about this. So I made a couple of calls, and lo and behold, here we are. So I'm so excited.
Glad to be here.
All right. Let's jump right into it. Welcome, Senator. Let's start for those of our audience members who may not be very familiar with us. Tell us a little bit about your path toward being a state senator.
Sure. I've been a lawyer for 35 years, representing individuals who have housing discrimination and other forms of discrimination, as well as nonprofit organizations that were building housing. And I got involved in politics right after the 2008 Obama campaign. Mm. I was a volunteer for the campaign. And when the president won, he inspired me to get involved in government. I've been in Cheltenham Township and decided to run for the Board of Commissioners, which is like the city council for the town, and won, surprisingly. And then shortly thereafter, about 4 years thereafter, I looked at what was going on in the state and thought we needed to get some changes at the state, and ran for the state senate and won. So I've had one full term, and starting the second term just now.
Very exciting. Very exciting. Thank you for leading. Thank you for running. And yeah, I think Obama inspired a lot of people. Our current president is also inspiring a lot of people to run. So it is diversifying our elected officials. So that's a wonderful thing. So tell us, let's understand, who is within your constituency and where are your offices? What are your boundaries?
Sure. So every Senate district is about 245,000 people. My district includes West Oak Lane, parts of Logan, parts of Germantown, West Mount Airy, East Mount Airy, Cheltenham, Cedarbrook, Abington, Springfield, Jenkintown. So I basically have Northwest Philadelphia and Eastern Montgomery County. And it's a tremendous area to represent. The people are so friendly, dedicated, and committed to having strong communities.
It also sounds like it's a pretty diverse population.
It is. There's a significant range of some very high income neighborhoods and some very low income neighborhoods. There's one neighborhood not far from the McDonald's on Cheltenham that I think 51% of that area is in poverty.
Wow.
So there's a significant range across the entire district. Yes, that's right.
Very interesting. And we're just a couple of, we're not too far from there.
That's right.
Okay, so that is a very wide range.
Oh, I didn't tell you where my offices were.
Yes, let's talk about your offices.
Sorry about that. So I had three offices, one in Harrisburg, one on Germantown Avenue, right at Mount Pleasant, and one in Abington, very close to the Roslyn train station.
Okay. All right, great. You know what? I was going to talk about this later, but since we're mentioning the offices, because a lot of people don't know that they can call their state senator's office. What do you encourage people to call your office about? How can they get help from you, or how can they help you, maybe?
I'm very proud to say that we have some excellent offices in the district. We serve over 3,000 people each year. And some of the things that we do are help with state services. Say someone needs a birth certificate or a death certificate or a handicap placard. These are all things that my office does. We also help with SEPTA passes so that if you're 65 and older, you get a pass so you can ride SEPTA for free. We have notary services. So we are there to provide any kind of assistance a person needs with the state. But I also want to share, we have online services now.
I noticed that.
So if a person doesn't have time to come into the office, you can go to my website at senatorhaywood.com, and there you can have get an application for a birth certificate right online, death certificate right online, even complaints for race, sex, and other discrimination, all on my website.
Fantastic. Thank you for moving that into the 21st century, right? So wonderful. All right, great. So now people know senatorhaywood.com. Let's also give them a phone number. Tell them the number.
Sure. 215-242-8171 is my office phone number. You mentioned the 21st century. We are developing an app, not yet ready to share, Ooh. But we hope to have an app that is a place where people can go to get these services on the phone.
Fantastic. All right. Keep us posted about that for sure. Okay. Let's jump into it. Now, why did you choose to draft legislation for a Pennsylvania state retirement plan?
So when I got in the state Senate, I was made a chair of the aging committee, the Democratic chair. And I began to have many conversations with individuals about what it's like when you get 80, 90. And what I heard is that there are a number of people in their mid-80s who are running out of money. They've worked all their lives and are running out of money. It was also in 2015 when the state was looking at changing the pension plans for state and school workers. So this whole question about what do we do in retirement was big in the state Senate. And what I did was I looked around to see what other states were doing. Because it's clear to me that we're one among 50 states, and there are examples all around the nation. And I found a number of states who came up with plans so that individuals could save for retirement automatically through the state. Very similar to the plans that we have to allow individuals to save for college through the state. It's your money, but we save it, we manage it, so you get a better return and less fees.
Got it. So we being the state is essentially the administrator of the plan. Is that the idea?
That's exactly right. It okay. allows, we're thinking that the Treasury would do it because they manage the 529 plans for college savings. Mm-hmm. So what the Treasury would do would have professional management so that the funds would be invested in a professional way. Hopefully that'll cut the fees down. Also, professional management helps with the investments. You know, I've had a 401k for a saving plan for many years. Very seldom have I made any changes to those investments. And I'm pretty much stuck with what I thought I was going to do 20 years ago.
There you go.
Not professional management. Mm-hmm. And so with the treasurer doing the management, he'll be able to make good decisions about how the money can be invested and grow.
Okay. Okay. So this is great. So let's differentiate this plan that you're proposing, the bill that you're proposing, from what a lot of people do have. I'm privileged to be a federal employee, and I have access to something called a Thrift Savings Plan, which is the equivalent of a 401k. And so the value of that is my employer administers that. I came on, I think when I started 20 years ago, I had to opt in, meaning that if I just sort of like, oh, I looked at those papers, I got very confused by them probably. And so it's just like, okay, I'll decide on that later. One of the, I think, best things that's happened is for people who have employer-sponsored plans now, they have to opt out, because I think that procrastination is one of the biggest problems and reasons for the savings crisis.
I agree with you 100%. And our plan will have a few differences. Number one, it will be for workplaces where there's not a plan already.
Okay.
And there are over 2 million employees in workplaces without any retirement planning. So we're trying to cover those who are not already covered for savings. Second, the plan is as we are thinking about it, be very similar to a 401k, so that an individual will have their money invested. There's no guarantee of return, as you know, in these investments, but their money will be invested. We are seriously looking at an automatic in, and that you're in unless you opt out. And I think I strongly agree. Yeah. The examples I've heard all show that being in is the best way to stay in.
Exactly, exactly. So another difference is, so with the 401k plans and the 403b plans that are offered by the employers, I think the current maximum that the employee can contribute is $18,500. I am over 50, so I can actually contribute an additional $6,000. So that's a lot of money. Will your plan follow that, or more of the individual retirement account, which is another option for people who don't have access to an employer plan?
So we're still in negotiation about what the final plan will be. We're fortunate that it's bipartisan. We have support amongst Republicans in the state Senate. We have support amongst Republicans in the House. And I've spoken with the governor. If we put something together that's good, the governor's ready to sign it. So I can't say how we're going to end up.
Okay.
But I do believe that we're at least I can tell you we're starting from a 401k framework,
okay,
which would lead us up to the 18,000. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to say where we're going to end up yet, because we're still in the process of drafting the legislation.
Right.
I can tell you that it's extremely unusual to have Republicans in the Senate and Republicans in the House, Democrats in the Senate and House, working together to fix anything.
Yeah.
So I'm very optimistic that getting all these folks together can create a result that we think makes sense. I will also say this. The state treasurer spent over a year doing a study on what the plan should look like. And that is the foundation for what we're doing in terms of moving forward as well.
You know what? I'm glad you said that, because there's a document on the AARP, American Association of Retired Professionals, Retired People site, that actually lists all the states that had proposed something. And so many of them ended up with, you know, it's sort of sitting, it didn't go anywhere. But many of the pieces of legislation were just about, can we do a study? Can we just look into the research of what impact it might have? So can you tell us a couple of findings from either the plans that have already moved forward? And I understand there are 6 states that are at least sort of, you know, the legislation's been passed, mm-hmm, or from our Pennsylvania state.
Sure, sure. Yeah, let me share on both sides. So I attended a conference at Brown University in December with all of the leaders who were doing these plans across the United States.
Cool.
And what was shared was that they're all in a roll. Those who are moving forward the fastest are in a rollout stage. Several have gotten large employers included, haven't yet gotten to small employers, and the response has been tremendous. The employers are extremely satisfied that they're able to provide retirement option for their employees. The employees are glad. And so the initial rollout, the report was, as it was fantastic.
Wow.
And I was very pleased to see that. And this was from Illinois representatives, California, Oregon, the states that are moving forward, they were all present. In terms of the treasurer's report, he really came in favor of the automatic deduction. You know, everyone is in as a way to maximize savings. I would say that would be one of the core features of his report, and that the report was put together from a combination of business leaders, employees, older adults. I think he had over a dozen people on his task force to get the report done. And so that support for his report, we hope, will move into the legislature.
Okay.
So we can get this passed.
let's break down, what does the automatic deduction mean?
Thank you for asking that. Automatic deduction means that you set an amount to go into retirement, and you're automatic. Every employee who's in a workplace without a retirement plan is automatically part of the plan.
As soon as they get a job that doesn't offer one.
That's exactly right. That's the best case scenario.
Got it.
And then they would obviously have to determine the amount that they want to contribute on their own.
Okay.
We're looking at different minimums as well as maximums per month. But the states that have the automatic, where everybody's enrolled, the employers essentially upload their payroll,
mm-hmm.
which we have to some extent because obviously everybody's got to pay their payroll taxes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, so, right. So it's not like, being done.
That's not a mystery situation.
So Very good point.
Because we're already deducting payroll taxes. And that is then used to create the system so the automatic payments are made. And I think that in some states, it's pretty much consistent with the payroll deduction for taxes. They've got another line item for retirement.
Okay. That makes perfect sense. Is there a corollary or a sort of what would you do if it weren't automatic?
I don't think it would work.
Yeah,
you know,
there you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, no, it sounds like it needs to be
I should say there are one or two states... I spoke too harshly. There are one or two states that have a voluntary approach.
Okay.
And so the employers, if they're in, if they want to be in, their success, yeah, I think is less. So I don't want to say that it can't work, but I think it's less effective.
So let me clarify. It sounds like you're saying with the automatic deduction, any employer, maybe at a certain employee level, that doesn't offer their own 401k or option, then essentially they would be required
yes.
to make this available to their employees.
That's exactly right.
That's very interesting. Okay. Because it'd be too easy for everybody to say, no, I don't want to do this, right?
That's right. And one of the concerns was that the employers would find participation a burden,
okay,
a hardship. In the states that are rolling it out, they have not found that to be the case.
Right. Again, like you said, they're pulling the state taxes all the time. Okay. This is very helpful. And then, again, we're looking at all of those employers being required to participate and hopefully doing the you have to opt out rather than opt in.
That's our best case scenario. Again, I have the caveat that we haven't finished the legislation.
Okay.
There's still some negotiation to go forward. But that is the best case outcome, in my opinion.
Okay. All right. Great. I'm looking at some of the other sort of features we talked about. And so just to clarify, we mentioned I think it's $18,500 now for 401k, 403bs. And all of these rules are set by the IRS. The IRS also sets the rules for the individual retirement account. And right now, the maximum that an individual can contribute to that is $6,500. So I like that you're leaning towards the other because that is such a smaller amount.
It is. And let me just share something in terms of the impact on the state. We've been talking a lot about individuals being able to retire with dignity. If we don't create more savings opportunities for people in Pennsylvania, the Treasurer's report identified about $14 billion that the state will have to come up with to deal with the individuals who don't have enough money when it comes to retirement. And what that means is that there's health care that would be on the state. There's housing that would be on the state. There's food that the state would have to subsidize. And so the more we do nothing, the more likely it is that when the rubber meets the road and people have these needs, the state is going to have to fill that gap. The current estimate is $14 billion.
Just for the state of Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania alone. And we are a state where about 1 in 5 Pennsylvanians are going to be over the age of 65 in the next few years. We could get to 1. I've seen some estimates of as high as 1 in 4. That's a lot of people,
right.
And if we don't have money at that point, there's going to be a lot of foreclosures and a lot of people going to the state for assistance.
Right.
This is one way, amongst others, that we can address it.
Right. We're covering quite a bit, and we've still got a lot of time. So I'm gonna go down a path here to sure. talk about. It's sort of like, how did we get here, right? The people you're talking about who are going to be 65 soon, a lot of them were even lucky enough to have pensions. But when pensions started disappearing, what, maybe 20 years ago?
Yeah, I think, let me say a few things about that. Number one, we've seen studies that say as high as 1 in 3 Americans, this is national, have $0 or $1,000 when it comes time to retire of their own money. That's very challenging. You know, $1,000 cannot last very long,
right.
Which is why we see more and more older people in the workforce. Mm-hmm. The second thing, in terms of movement away from the set pensions mm-hmm. that were set in stone for folks at the time of retirement. And you're right, we've moved significantly away from that approach. In my opinion, that's been a tremendous mistake. So the 401ks, I believe, and these savings plans, they work well for people who have a lot of money. They're in a position to save. And actually, when the 401k program came out initially, it was for high-income people.
That's interesting.
What companies decided to do 20 years ago or so is move the risk of retirement to the employees.
Exactly.
Away from themselves mm-hmm. in terms of paying for these pension plans. As a result, we've got a number of people now who didn't do the savings either because of income or discipline or their retirement investment decisions weren't the best right. or fees ate up some of their savings. And so they're getting into a position where even with the 401ks, they're not in a position to have enough money when it comes to retirement. So I am a big critic of the shift that employers made. I was a critic of the state when we made the shift to make employees more responsible. It was a clear cost, risk allocation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The risk of retirement is yours, not ours.
Right.
And so that's where we are. That's we've got to deal with it. But historically, I consider it a significant mistake, just as bad as the lock 'em up approach of the same period.
There you go. So that's now we've kind of started talking about it a little different constituency than what this bill is for, because, you know, we're talking about people who had, you know, employers who were like, okay, we've got this pension plan. You're automatically in it if you've been here 6 months to a year or something. But what we've said is now those have gone away.
That's over.
Yeah. And so now it's like, okay, now you've got this 401k, 403b plan. But like I said, you know, and I was pretty savvy, I got this big packet of material. And I did sit on it for a couple of days, but I made my decision. Many people are like, I don't even know what that means. They might be making pretty good money and they can, you know, save towards it. And so they're just delaying. But what very often happens, even with, employers of maybe sort of like, you know, entry level folks, if they offer the plan, but they pay $8 an hour, $10 an hour, you know, a woman with two kids is like, well, wait a minute. So you're saying you're going to take money out of my pay? You're asking me to take money out of my present pay to put toward this kind of unknown future? And so they choose not to.
Yeah, it's very challenging to expect people at $8 an hour to save for retirement. In fact, I don't really think that's a reasonable expectation at that pay level. Of course, we do need to get the minimum wage up to at least $15 an hour.
Absolutely.
And I'm in a tremendous fight for that around the state and here
yeah.
in the city with McDonald's in particular.
Mm-hmm.
But we have seen studies that show the automatic deduction of savings helps savers at all income levels.
At all income levels, exactly.
Yeah, it's not
right.
just the low income people. It's
right.
the middle and upper income people. It's taking the decision away. You make the decision
exactly.
one time. And then you don't have to pay any attention to it thereafter.
This is why I like the opt out, because it's like, you know what, we're you know, but just because that's the thing. It's like if you're not given the decision, you know, I mean, it's sort of like ah. So anyway, I think that's really
yeah, like
important.
You say, people yeah. sit on it, and right. they sit on it often, not because they're lazy. It's like, how do I make a decision about investing?
Right, exactly.
It's a tough place to be.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the reasons I actually like the life cycle plans, because it's sort of like, okay, there's this whole allocation thing. It's supposed to be in the stock market, it's supposed to be in bonds. And so life cycle is a way for people to just sort of calm down a little bit and say, okay, I'm going to trust that this life cycle fund is going to help me do that decision because it's based on when I'm going to retire. So I like those.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about, though, because it is related. We're talking about retirement. Social Security. Some people say it's not going to be around. Some people say it won't be around like it is today, that we've got this imbalance with particularly like these millions of millennials versus the people who are paying into the system. So help us understand that.
Excuse me. So my view on Social Security is the following. Number one, I think there's a significant level of political support so that it will be around. Mm-hmm. The decision to keep Social Security is not a financial one. Americans have plenty of money to do pretty much whatever we want. And the question is, how are we going to spend it? And so we can have an extremely strong Social Security system if the legislators, the politicians in Washington, D.C. decide to do so. So it's not like
It's political will.
Yeah, it's not like we don't have the money. So right. I think there's some confusion about we have the money, we don't have the money. We have plenty of money. And now we allow extremely rich people to hold on to money that should be taxed. But it's not like we're still an extremely rich nation. Yes. And so this is all a question about how we want to spend our money as opposed to not having it. So right. I do want to clarify that, because sometimes it's comments that we don't have the money, that's false.
Exactly. Great. Now, thank you for that.
Sure. Now, second, what I would say is what my mother shared with me about Social Security. She said that she's 91. Mm-hmm. And she shared that when she was young, very few African-American men got Social Security because they weren't living that long.
Oh.
Now, I'm talking of several decades ago.
Okay.
So the Social Security number initially was set pretty much at life expectancy. Mm-hmm. So not that many people were getting to 65. They might get to 69 or something like that. So our Social Security system was designed for maybe 5 years of retirement. Now we have a situation where you can have 30 years of retirement if you can make it to 95. And so there's no design for that, which means that we got to make a decision about putting more money in, or what's common is saying move the age up to 70 or some other age so that the amount of retirement years that we're covering are smaller. I think if you go to initial design and you look at the life expectancy at the time of Social Security, it was just a few years beyond 65.
Yeah.
So funding 5 years of retirement, even funding 10 years of retirement, very different than 20 years of retirement.
And 30. Yeah.
And 30.
Yeah.
And so that, I think, is part of the significant part of the challenge. Yes. We have a system design issue. But we do have the money to address it.
Right.
Now, if we want to say that we're not going to tax the rich, then we don't have enough money to address it.
Mm-hmm.
If we're willing to tax the rich fairly, we have plenty of money to address it.
Let's break down this taxing the rich. So when you say that, what I think about is our system right now, the money that comes out of my paycheck, once me or whoever, you know, the rule is, well, I think for this year, once you've made $117,000, something like that, and that's a lot of money, then you've paid all you need to pay into Social Security. So I remember years ago when they were, you know, throwing out whatever the number was back then, it's like, okay, so as soon as Bill Gates comes in and has his first cup of coffee, he's paid all he's paying into Social Security.
He is going to pay.
Right, exactly. And so just tinkering with that number right there, right, would be significant because you have a whole lot of people who are making significantly more than $117,000 these days. It's interesting because it makes me think of, you know, with these festivals and different things that happen, people are trying to be equitable. They'll say, okay, we charge you on a sliding fee scale. right? And so if you make a lower amount, here's your fee, and then it, you know, as it goes up. And I remember one particular group, you know, and this is common, so I'm not saying that they were necessarily doing anything wrong. I just want to make a suggestion. When it got to the higher amount, it said, if you make $150,000 or over, then you pay this amount. And it was a set amount. My thought is, well, if they make $150,000 or over, maybe they make, you know, $1.5 million, ask them for a percentage. You know, should it be just a straight percentage? Because you're essentially saying, no matter where you are in making more than $150,000, we want the same amount.
So let's look at your contract. I think what you're saying is illuminating and correct. And I just want to highlight what I think I heard you say. If you make, if you get over 117, this same person you're talking about makes $150,000. Mm-hmm. The difference between 117 and 150, how much do they pay in Social Security?
Nothing.
The right. difference between right. 117 and 200, how much do they pay?
Nothing, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I mean,
there's the money to finance the system is present. It's just, right. do we want to use it?
Right. And at least what I'm hearing is, like you said, it's political will. Nobody really wants to touch it yet. But the more they keep putting it off, whatever changes they make, and I'm confident the changes will be made, but it's that sort of first year and the people after who are going to feel the biggest brunt, right? So we need to start easing into these changes and just accept, you know what, we got to start fixing this. Because like you said, people are living longer than 5 years in retirement now.
I agree with you 100%. Now, the retirement approach that I've heard is often is several legs to the school stool, the so-called retirement stool.
Oh, right, three legs, yes.
Right? And so having savings is part of it.
Absolutely.
So I don't want to say all the solutions on the Social Security side.
Absolutely not.
And so this plan that we're proposing for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and the one that some other states have as well is part of the solution. So individuals have some of their own money. To save, it'll put people in a much better position when it comes to retirement.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I look forward to hearing more about that plan for sure. So let's talk about how do you picture it going through? You said you've got a lot of support. Tell us timing and steps. Almost
sure.
like, remember, what was that great show when we were kids? Schoolhouse Rock.
Talk yeah. about
how does a bill become a law, and how do you what barriers or successes do you anticipate as this starts working its way through?
So as I said earlier, we have a big advantage. We've got the Senate and House Republicans and the Senate and House Democrats working together. What I anticipate is that a relatively small group of leaders will craft the legislation, and that will have the same piece of legislation agreed upon in the House and the Senate. That's unusual.
That's great.
Once we get that, I believe it'll go to each of the groups, Senate Republicans, House and Senate, House Democrats and House Republicans, excuse me. And we'll introduce it. We'll introduce it on the Senate side. We'll introduce it on the House side. I do not anticipate hearings on this matter. We may have hearings, but we've had the report. That is, I think, a big substitute for hearings.
I see.
In terms of time frame, that's pretty challenging to define. In a month or two, we're going to be right into the budget, and all matters budget will be top priority. So this is something that we might have a much better shot at in the fall. Hmm. It may take us a few months to get to negotiation, get all the items worked out, the details worked out. That's going to be hard to do, I believe, before the budget is due in June.
I see.
So I would anticipate we may have something ready to go in the fall, and hopefully it can move quickly. And now quickly in the legislature is a matter of months, you know, not days often. But I think we have a shot of getting it done this year.
Wow.
I'm optimistic.
Okay.
But I think we do have a shot of getting it done this year. And we've got some momentum, and I don't want to lose that as well.
Understood. Great. Look forward to definitely staying on top of that. So what can, at this point, constituency do to support this before we, you know, go and, I guess, do people get to vote on it?
They'll only be voted on by the members, the state senators and the House members, but there's a lot that people can do.
Okay.
Number one, it'd be extremely helpful with folks who are either employers or employees in a workplace with no retirement plan, to contact my office and share your story. Sharing your story of why this kind of plan would help you, either as a business owner, as an employee, would be extremely helpful. That's part of the persuasion, making the case in terms of why this needs to happen. If you're an employer, I encourage you to contact the Chamber of Commerce. Make your voice heard with the Chamber of Commerce. They're organized in the legislature. They're organized in Harrisburg. And they'll be more likely to support this piece of legislation if they're hearing from individual business owners that this needs to happen.
Okay.
So those stories, contacting the Chamber of Commerce, those are two things that would help immediately. Because what we have to do is continue to push this as a priority. One of the things that happens in Harrisburg is there's, I don't know, two, four, many dozens of priorities. And for any issue to be resolved, there's got to be a voice, a public demand to make this a priority. And so we have some support, but in order to continue the momentum, it'd be very, very helpful to hear from constituents. They can contact my office at 215-242-8171. Let us know they have a story to share, that they want to support the legislation. Or visit my website. You can email me through my website at senatorhaywood.com. But hearing from the public on this would be extremely valuable.
Fantastic. So one of the, and I think you mentioned this as we were doing some pre-talking before the show started, the perception that, I guess, sort of, who's paying for this? Like, what are the costs? And I read in one article that, yeah, there's sort of an upfront cost, you know, you're getting on a new system, but it would pay for itself eventually.
That's so exactly right.
Talk us through that.
Yes, we're not anticipating this being a drain on the taxpayers at all. Just like the 529 tuition plans, they're not a drain on the taxpayers in terms of a budget item. So we don't see this having any kind of significant expense whatsoever for the day-to-day taxpayers because we have the experience of the 529 tuition plans. So it's not like a mystery for us in terms of how to, or the Treasurer's Office, in terms of how to administer the plans, how to manage these plans, how to invest the money in a way that's responsible. We've got a model already that can be used, so I think we're in good shape in terms of administration.
Okay, great.
We've got competency.
Great. And it sounds like the employers aren't necessarily doing anything except, you know, like they're paying their taxes. So they're just, okay, then for these employees, I'm sending in a little extra money, right?
Yes. I think the the system that other states have implemented are not at all burdensome on the employers. I think we would do something very similar to what has happened in Illinois, or there was an example I heard in Oregon, both really the only time the employer is doing anything is some initial registration.
Right.
And it's a one-time event as opposed to weekly or monthly or whatever the payroll period may be. Mm-hmm. It's a one-time registration approach. And after that, very easy.
There you go. Well, I'll witness a little bit. I have been saving for my two nieces. Well, I have one who's 18 years old, and I've been saving for her through the 529 plan. I set it up initially, and it's been fantastic and very easy. And I started for my four-year-old niece, literally, I think, the month she was born. And yeah, fantastic.
I'm so glad you raised that, because starting early makes a tremendous difference, whether it's for college and tuition or for retirement. And a small amount now, you know, 30 years from now, it can really grow. We had 529 plans for our children. I have three children, 128, 26, and 25. And we had retirement plans for them. Obviously, it didn't cover the full cost of the college, but it helped to cover the cost. It was money that we didn't have to borrow because we had saved it over time.
Exactly.
And so I agree with you 100%. And it being automatic, for most people, you say it's 25 a month or 50 a month or whatever it is, mm-hmm. you don't even think about it.
Right.
You're not even saving at that point mm-hmm. consciously. Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No. It's really great. And these days, I mean, I'd say whether you're saving for a car, saving for a house, saving for retirement, it has to be automatic. Because if we live in such a society that encourages so much spending, if you're saying, well, I got to wait till the end of the month to see if there's anything left over, there's never going to be anything left over. So you got to automate.
Yeah, that's got to be the first thing that comes out.
Pay yourself first, as they say. There you go.
No, that's right. And it does work. And I think this is the what we want to share with people.
Yes.
This kind of savings will put you in a position where you have tens of thousands of dollars at the time of retirement. And that will give you more choices than you would have otherwise.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Let's see. So we covered, I said I wasn't going to cover this because I thought we'd run out of time. But we kind of covered. What tips do you have? Start early. Automate. There you go. Get in on this.
I think you hit the nail on the head. Mm-hmm. And by so doing, it avoids so many challenges later on.
Yes.
But the other thing I would say is, it is as simple as what you just summarized. This is not a list of 10 things to do.
Right.
20 things to do. Start early. Be consistent. You do those two things, you'd be much better off.
Absolutely. All right, so we've got about 15 minutes. So let's talk about the McDonald's campaign. This is really interesting. Y'all were out in 6-degree weather on MLK Day, but give us a little background.
It was extremely cold. there's no doubt about that. This was on MLK's birthday this year. And we made a decision that McDonald's owners in Philadelphia need to get their minimum pay up to at least $15 an hour. I and some others went to the McDonald's through the drive-through window. That one and others in the city. And we'd ask cashiers at the drive-through window, anybody in there making 7 1/4? They said, yeah. That's a shame. Mm-hmm. 7 1/4 in an hour is $15,000 a year. Poverty line for three is $20,000. It's poverty pay. Mm-hmm. Putting people below the poverty line is what you get at 7 1/4. Now, this is related to retirement.
Yes.
If we can get people's income to at least $15 an hour, then they may be able to have a little bit of money for retirement. You cannot expect people to save money for retirement at 7 1/4 in poverty. So we are now looking at additional actions to take with respect to these Philadelphia McDonald's owners. They have refused to meet with us.
I heard that. Yeah, that's unfortunate.
It's very unfortunate. They have a lobbyist in who represents several states. One of them is Pennsylvania. After the protest, the lobbyist asked to meet with me. I think it was a few days thereafter. And what we said to him was, obviously, we need $15 an hour, mm-hmm. and we're ready to have a discussion with the owners. Initially, he indicated to me he thought he could get a meeting with the owners put together. 3 weeks, 3.5, 4 weeks later, they said, no, he can't make it happen. He wanted us to meet with the Restaurant Association, which is all of the restaurant owners. They wanted
not just McDonald's.
Yeah, they wanted to hide McDonald's behind Wendy's, Burger King, KFC, Taco Bell. They want to hide McDonald's behind these other, so they would be less accountable. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, that's unacceptable.
Okay.
So we, along with Power, are recruiting other organizations to join in with us to focus on what I would call some accountability measures.
Okay.
To make McDonald's accountable. I can't really get into a discussion of the accountability measures now.
Okay.
Because some of this is, we need some element of surprise.
Okay.
To make the strategy effective. But we are going to be reaching out to, when we are already in the process of reaching out to leaders, people who know many of these owners, and let them know that anything less than 15 is unacceptable and immoral.
Okay. Let me do full disclosure here. So I'm a member of Power. I'm a member of the economic justice team that you've been working with. And it's been really interesting just to be on these calls and strategize around this stuff. After that first call, I went and I found a couple of articles. And one of them was about a group of, and I think they had a name, maybe it was something like the Philadelphia Black McDonald's owners. And the article was all about their commitment to community. And so I was like, oh, well, this is a great way to go. You know, these are the people we need to be talking to. And, you know, they'll be behind this. So it's a little disappointing. It's very disappointing to hear that they haven't even been willing to meet.
It's extremely disappointing. Yeah, yeah. And these are folks who, if you were around in the 70s and the 80s and early 90s, where the African-American community was standing up to get more African-American franchise owners.
Yep.
We took a public position for more African-American franchise owners. But now, it's my opinion that the franchise owners have a charity approach to the community. And by that, I mean they will give out toys. They will give out money to support an event. They will donate to charities. They do not have an economic justice approach to the community. An economic justice approach means people get at least $15 an hour. A charity approach means that you provide something to charities, to the community, that the community does need. I'm not saying that we don't need some of that charity. But what do you get in return for the charity? Tax deduction.
Right.
Tax deduction. So I'm not saying they're not good-hearted people who want to make charity. But I know they're not doing the right thing in terms of paying people who work there on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
That's a justice question.
Absolutely. So let's do a little sort of devil's advocate, though. So a lot of people are saying, well, it's a really small margin in food, you know, like in, and you know, just McDonald's doesn't have that big a margin. Is that true? McDonald's, I mean, they've been around for years. They make a lot of money.
So there's a couple of approaches to that. I don't know exactly how much these McDonald's owners are making. I do know that several of them own 2, 4, 6, 8 franchise stores. There's another framework here. At what level of exploitation are we going to accept?
Right.
So they may make less money. I'm not saying that they would not. But I don't see any McDonald's stores closing.
Right.
Right. The minimum wage in New York is 11. If you go to the border, there are many places where Pennsylvania and New York border. The McDonald's stores on the New York side of the border, they're fine. They're making money.
Okay.
The McDonald's on the Pennsylvania side of the border, 7.25 Pennsylvania, 11 throughout New York. And so where the wages are higher, the McDonald's stores, they're surviving. In Pennsylvania, we learned that there may be one exception, but I think every McDonald's store is franchise owned, local owners. And so an approach to go to the national, they don't own the stores. It's local people who own these stores. So we have to hold them accountable.
Yeah.
I should also share that last week, McDonald's corporate, the national, made a decision or announced a decision that they were no longer going to be an obstacle to fight raising the minimum wage, because they had been involved in a fight to stop raising minimum wage really up until then. And so we do have a significant change, I would say, by the corporate, the national McDonald's, that they are no longer going to fight. I think that came in large part because of what's happening at the national level. The U.S. House of Representatives is coming up with legislation to bring the minimum wage up to $15 an hour.
There you go.
And so with this national change, I think that's what caused McDonald's to fold.
Okay, okay.
But we still got to get accountability here in Philadelphia.
Right, right. So this $15 an hour, it seems like it's really picking up speed nationally. Jersey, I think, is talking about it, Pennsylvania. The city of Philadelphia already has it in place. As we're working our way up to it, it's been passed, but it's a slow road up to making the 15. I think it was 12 for city employees and contractors, and now it's going to work its way up to 15. But right, the difference is that was only pertaining to city employees and city contractors. And so what we're talking about is all the other employers in the city of Philadelphia or the state.
In the state, yes. And we do have legislation in the state to get us to 15. What has been proposed is that we would be at $12 beginning July of this year. And then between then and 2025, we would get to 15. Because we understand that it's got to be graduated, particularly for some of the smaller stores.
Okay.
McDonald's Philly does not fit into the smaller store framework. Right. And so it's our position they should go to 15 immediately.
Okay.
Now, the state legislation, I'm moving away from the McDonald's situation briefly.
Understood.
The state legislation, I think we're in a tremendous position to get it passed. We got more members of the House and the Senate who want to see it passed. The opposition is shrinking. The leader of the Republicans in the state Senate said he wanted to have a discussion on it. And that's a big change before they wanted to keep it quiet. Now, the Republicans still have a majority in the House and the Senate. But we have put a significant amount of pressure on them. The governor has, too, with press conferences. So I believe that we got a good shot this year to get it raised. Now, what dollar amount we'll get it to, I think, is a big question. But I think we can get it raised.
Okay. But the language they're using is 15?
We have 12 now going to 15. Okay. That's been proposed. I can't tell you in Harrisburg what's proposed and what you end up with. Often very different.
Okay, understood.
But it's better to have a proposal that we support than obviously something that's crazy.
Right, right, absolutely. I just want to go back because you mentioned, and I don't think I've heard about this, that you said there's a federal bill?
Yes. So I can't remember the bill number, but there's a brother named Bobby Scott out of Carolina. And Bobby Scott has proposed legislation to get us to $15 an hour. It's got a significant level of support. Now, it hasn't passed the House yet, but it's under discussion, and hopefully it will pass. I think he had several hundred co-sponsors, so he's got quite a bit of support. So I'm really optimistic that that will happen. Now, you still got the people in the Senate who are obviously a significant problem.
Yes.
But you take one step at a time.
Okay. All right. All right, great.
Yeah, Bobby Scott's leading that charge. Congressman Evans is in full support. I've talked to Congressman Evans. You should also know that Congressman Evans was present with us at the McDonald's when it was 6 degrees. So we've got some significant support to get McDonald's to a level that I think meets a acceptable moral standard.
Great.
We do need a moral standard in our nation. We need to have a realization that some things are too low, that they attack a person's dignity.
Yes.
This is an example.
Wage is an example, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for that. All right, we got a couple more minutes, so let's tell us what else you're working on at the legislative level or anything else.
Sure. So I got a few things going on in the district that I'd like to share, as well as Harrisburg. But in the district, I'm so happy. We have reading camps at recreation centers, at 7 of them in the district. Here in Germantown, we have Lonnie Young Recreation Centers where we have a reading camp. It's connected with the summer recreation program. We provide reading tutors for those who are first grade, second grade, as part of the Read by Fourth initiative to get our kids to read by fourth grade. Right now, we've served about 700 kids so they don't lose track, don't fall behind during the summer. And I'm very hopeful we can get to 1,000 children. So we need 300 children to enroll this summer so we can get to 1,000 children. So that is a big initiative that we're working on for the summer. Second, with the Urban Affairs Coalition, we have successfully so far, organized a mentoring program. It's a mentoring collaborative. And basically what that means is there are a lot of solo mentoring organizations, one person, two persons, doing mentoring. And we see a need to bring that capacity up. So you have a person, they can bring on two or three mentors, three or five or six mentors to serve more of the young people who really are looking for direction. And so the Mentoring Collaborative is designed to give them some small amount of money, but also training. Wow. So you can know how to screen a new mentor, know how to match mentors and mentees. And so I'm very hopeful that we'll be able to address this question. Young people said to me that in order to reduce violence, one of the solutions was mentoring. And so we want to take the young people up on what they've already requested of us and respond. So those are two of the big programs that we're rolling out now. In Harrisburg, my number one issue, raising the minimum wage. Okay. And so that's something we're working on. I guess, say, finally, something that's happening next week is we've got to move more toward renewable energy. And we can. We can. And so in Pennsylvania, we're proposing legislation that will require these electric companies who are buying the energy to buy more energy from solar companies, to buy more energy from wind companies and hydroelectric, so that we can have renewable sources of energy for our future and for now.
Got it. Got it. Okay, that sounds good. Now, two other things I saw listed on your website. One was the summer jobs program for kids. Is that something you can help folks get involved in? And sometimes there's money for it, sometimes there's not, right?
Yes, there's definitely on both sides. We have an internship program where there's no money. But we work with the Urban Affairs Coalition to identify employers who will provide summer jobs. And so I reach out to employers to get them to commit to summer jobs. Individuals should contact the Philadelphia Youth Network. They can contact my office. That might be a little bit easier. Okay. And we can help connect them to the Urban Affairs Coalition and some other organizations that actually provide the jobs. My job is to get employers to commit to summer jobs. My job is to persuade employers.
Because you're saying, because at least when I was young in New York, I grew up in New York City, it was the city that was doing it. It sounds like you're saying you've kind of taken it on yourself to create these jobs.
We
find
do.
The employers, even whether the city has the money or not.
Yeah. Okay. Now, it's not just me.
Okay.
There are a number of leaders across the city who try to persuade employers to hire young people in the city.
Okay.
And the mayor's part of it, Senator Vincent Hughes. I mean, there's a lot of people, so I don't want to give the impression that I'm the only one.
Got it.
Because that's not the case.
Okay.
But there are a number of leaders, and we go to the Chamber of Commerce and ask them to hire young people and many other organizations to do the same. This whole summer job program is pretty much managed by the Urban Affairs Coalition. And so we get to, we call Charmaine and say, Charmaine and Malik Turner, who runs a coalition, and say, hey, Jeff Brown agreed to hire so many people, and then she takes it from there.
Great, great. And the last thing is, I think I saw something about a, was it a workshop for people who were recently released from prison, I believe?
Excuse me, yes. So we're heavily involved in the criminal justice reform effort. So we have some workshops that are mostly about how to get employment opportunities. We have expungement, where some individuals have records, and we try to help them to get the records removed. Now, in Pennsylvania, we got a lot of rules for what can be removed and what cannot be removed. But we do help people with expungement clinics. I think we just had an expungement clinic just happen, actually. But we are looking at having another one in the fall. There was an expungement clinic yesterday, actually.
Okay.
But this is an important effort. I can talk another time about the criminal justice reform effort, but it's also critical for our community.
Well, we will have you back again. This is Vanessa Lowe. This has been wonderful. I've been here with Senator Art Haywood. We've been talking about retirement and a state retirement bill that he's sponsoring. I'm really excited about that. And the campaign for $15 an hour. So it's bigger than I thought it was. So that's really exciting to hear about the House bill. All right, let's wind down. You've been listening to Vanessa's Money Hour on Germantown Community Radio, WRLGLP at 92.9 FM in Northwest Philadelphia. Join me on the 20th, where I will have Edgar Villanueva, the author of a book that I've been mentioning so many times. Oh, goodness. I'm trying to remember the name now. The Decolonization of Wealth. It's a great book. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.